Remembering Baseball's Boss.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. To baseball fans and players alike, he was the man everybody loved to hate, but his team, when he was in charge, was a winner. George Steinbrenner died this morning. He had just celebrated his 80th birthday on July 4th. Steinbrenner had been in frail health for some time, and he suffered a heart attack last night in Tampa, Florida. His contributions to the sports world, financially and creatively, were innumerable. David Carter is professor of sports business at USC's Marshall School of Business. He's with us live here in Los Angeles. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
You know, we know he demanded and he paid for champions, right, with the Yankees. I mean, what did he teach the sports world? What's his legacy?
Well, I think it's amazing. You know, growing up a Dodger fan, you had to really revile him. But as a sports business person, you had to absolutely revere his accomplishments. You know, he bought this team in the early 70s for a little less than $10 million, and now it's probably worth 150 times that. And so what he meant to the entire establishment of sports business is nothing less than just amazing.
You know, he famously overpaid athletes. I mean, thereby driving up the price that a team would have to pay its superstars, free agency and all that. I mean, was that good or bad for sports?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, his strategic moves created massive ripple effects throughout the sport with the league and the teams that had to play catch up, and really put everybody on the defensive when he brought in players like Catfish Hunter and Reggie Jackson in the early days of free agency. It fundamentally changed how teams build their teams, and again, it's had a huge economic effect on the entire sports landscape, not just baseball.
And he was also a marketing guru. I mean, what did he do for sports on TV? He was among the first to take advantage of the cable networks, right, that would broadcast most of the Yankees games.
Well, he was unabashed about trying to generate revenue that he could use to invest in players, and in getting the Yankee Entertainment and Sports Network started, again, it was just another element of this arms race whereby he was able to create much more revenue than any of the other teams, and he plowed that into his rosters, not always successfully, but again, fundamentally reshaped how these teams had to go about generating revenue if they were to compete with a big market team like the Yankees.
All right. David Carter, professor of sports business at USC's Marshall School here in Los Angeles. Professor, thanks.
Thank you.
BP today is going to test a cap it successfully put on its spewing oil well in the Gulf of Mexico. Robots secured a stack of valves on top of the broken well yesterday, which the oil giant says should stop the flow temporarily. Now, work continues on relief wells that are supposed to eventually stop the oil altogether. BP estimates that it spent somewhere around $3.5 billion on the spill, and there's a ton of work to do. Now, the Financial Times reports today money that's being paid for cleanup could very well tap into the amount BP was going to pay in taxes here in the United States and in the UK. Vincent Boland is with the Financial Times Lex commentary team. He's with us from London right now. Hi there, Vincent.
Hello.
So how much is BP saving in taxes?
Well, it looks like they're going to save $10 billion in tax payments over the next 4 years, which is quite a lot of money if you're a Treasury minister.
So is it using the cleanup effort to seek a deduction?
Some of it might be tax deductible, but that would be a smaller portion. The main thing is that the money that it pays to clean up the damage comes out of its profits. Taxes are also levied on profits, so there will be less in profit on which to levy taxes.
I understand. The company makes less money, so it's going to be taxed less. I mean, but what I don't understand is why the government's perhaps don't hit the company even harder to make up for that lost revenue.
Well, they may do so, but I think it would require, you know, particular decrees or legislation of some kind to do that, or some kind of declaration that they are imposing a special levy on BP. I'm not sure that either the American or the British government would want to do that, at least for the moment, because the tax shortfall, although it's, you know, it's significant over, if you add it all up, probably extended over a 4 year period, it is not that huge given the enormous amounts of money that both governments collect anyway in taxes. But it's quite a headline figure, this $10 billion that they can save over 10 years. So I think that, you know, there probably will be political pressure on both governments to make it up elsewhere.
Vincent Boland from the Lex column at the Financial Times, we thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's check numbers. Yeah, markets are up right now. The Dow is up 157 points, more than 1.5%, 10,374. The NASDAQ and the S&P both up about 1.5% as well. Shares in Europe finished higher today, just under 2%. Asian shares slipped a little. We got word today the disparity between how much the country imports and exports keeps growing. The nation's trade deficit now tops $42 billion in May. That's the highest level in a year and a half.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at Vanguard.com.
Global fundraising to help victims of disasters, earthquakes and tsunamis are common these days, but a quarter century ago it was practically unheard of. That is, until a couple of big music concerts, one in Philadelphia, another in London. Live Aid brought together a galaxy of stars to raise money for Ethiopian famine relief, and it's changed the business of fundraising, as the BBC's Rebecca Singer reports for Marketplace.
In the summer of 1985, over 150,000 people packed into stadiums on both sides of the Atlantic. The pop star turned activist Bob Geldof had mobilised musicians in a new type of fundraising.
It's only the biggest pop event and certainly the most important because of what it's for, and what it's for is the worst natural disaster mankind has ever seen.
The events raised millions of dollars and aid reached poverty-stricken people across Africa. But after Live Aid, organisers realised that money was just a temporary fix and a more sophisticated approach was needed. Peter Gill was one of the first journalists to cover the Ethiopian crisis. He says Live Aid forced American and European governments to pay attention to African poverty.
I don't believe a famine of those proportions is possible.
Since Live Aid, charities have pushed for more permanent assistance, like cancelling the debts of developing countries and the introduction of fairer trade rules. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
And finally, author Ernest Hemingway's son is starting a new line of footwear bearing his dad's name. Patrick Hemingway says the shoes will be made of bison and calf hide. Best part about them, he says, you don't need socks. His dad hated socks. This is the Marketplace Morning Report in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.